Another great Friday night, another great podcast, and another landmark on the podcast. Phil, episode 40, another landmark. We did.
I'm glad you can count better than me, but that's why we keep the numbers in order.
That's for sure. Always number on each episode, and we're looking for another 40 maybe? Who knows? You never know what's going to happen. A lot's been happening as of late. But Phil, how you been doing? Another podcast. We got a great guest tonight. What's been going on, Phil?
This podcast. Thanks everybody for tuning in tonight. We try to do this every week, and like I said, tonight we have a great guest. When you look at monster trucks on the West Coast, there's a synonymous last name, and that's the last name Wink. Those Wink brothers have been around the business for a very long time, and you might know the first brother, Kevin, and then you might know Lindsay, who's driven all sorts of different trucks. But tonight, our guest is one of the other brothers. He's been all around the coast. He's driven some of the top trucks in the business, and he has a lot of career accolades. Very excited to have him on board here tonight. Our guest is Nathan Wink.
Start a cult with me. I'm not vibrating like I ought to be. I need a purpose. I can't keep surfing through this existential misery. Now we're gonna need some real estate.
Nathan, welcome to the show. How are you doing tonight?
Awesome. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Well, you are the first Wink brother on the podcast, so there you go on that. But we're going to kick it off with our first question. I like to ask this at the start of the show. How did you get your start in motorsports?
All three of us brothers took a liking to motorsports from the day we were young. I mean, Dad's trucks took a beating just because we loved the sound of power and the feel of power. And my first start was probably being involved with stock car racing in Saskatoon. I was able to get on a stock car team that traveled Western Canada with Dan Shirley's team in Saskatoon. And that was the start. And drag racing and tractor pulls was also involved at some point, but that was the beginning.
Yeah, that's, you know, very interesting where it's a lot of different dynamic. But, you know, at this time, you know, I see doing a lot of the circle track stuff. I mean, how much enjoyment did you have doing a lot of the circle track racing?
The circle track racing is, I know this is a monster track podcast, but honestly, the circle track racing was probably a little bit above, only because we got to go to the elite of circle track racing in Canada, and that was NASCAR Canada. And once we got to that level, we were there, we fit in, we were fast, we had a great crew, and we needed more money to keep us going, sort of thing. So I mean, those two sports, the monster trucks is a huge highlight. It was its thing at its time. And then I got to move on and do the NASCAR thing. And it was a really huge thing for me too. And I enjoyed both of them. So.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting when I see also a lot of the dynamic. Obviously, you have two brothers, Kevin and Lindsay. How competitive was it between, you know, you and your brothers in just about anything?
It was constantly competitive. It was always 2-on-1. Didn't matter what it was or who was with who. It was just 2-on-1 all the time. And so you had to learn to be that odd man out, and you had to learn to work as a team. And so you were kind of constantly always battling. And Lindsay and I did a lot of we played hockey. We were never on the same age to be on the same team, but it was always one of those things where we were both goaltenders, and we both worked on each other on dry land training sort of thing, out in the yard, throwing baseballs, doing whatever stuff to just improve our goaltending skills. We both played to a pretty good competitive level. I know I did a little bit better than he did, but whatever. He'll probably make a comment on that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure he's go ahead. Yeah, I'm sure all the brothers and whole family members are lurking. So anybody that's jumping in right now, make sure you like this video and make sure you share it all across social media. And everyone jumping here as we just getting started here with Nathan Wink. And I know I was looking at a lot of your stuff you have it written down. Did a lot of muscle car racing at the local drag strips. What was those experiences like?
Well, I started with my Dodge Dakota. I bought it brand new in 2000, and one of the first things I did was went to the drag strip with it. It wasn't the fastest truck in the world, but it was legal for what I wanted to do, and I was having fun with it. In fact, even the sales manager met me at the starting line and asked me if I really wanted to do that. And I was like, oh, sure. You know, if there's some reason this pedal can't go to the floor and still have warranty at the end of the day on the street or in the drag strip, it's maybe I shouldn't be buying this truck. But it started with that truck, and then I got, ever since I was 16 years old, I've had a 1974 Roadrunner, and I built a big engine for it, tried drag racing it a little bit. It was just such a fussy car to drive that it never went very far. And for the most part, my drag racing was involved with other friends that had cars, and I would come along and help out. So that was the biggest part of my drag racing.
We're going to get into the nitty gritty here. Nathan, how did you get introduced to monster trucks?
That all started with Kevin. Kevin came to school in Lethbridge to go to university in Lethbridge, or college, I should say, and started a summer job with a Frankish family. And that turned into monster trucks quite quickly. So it just, he was doing that in, I want to say 95-ish, maybe even earlier than that. He started getting involved with monster trucks with Don Frankish. And yeah, it was just, obviously as a kid, you looked up to anybody driving a monster truck or going to a monster truck show or being around a monster truck. And now one of our family members was actually in it. It was crazy. It blew our minds sort of thing. And eventually it started to become normal. But Kevin started in that, and I don't remember how many years he was in it for sure. And then he had to step out, and he offered it to me quickly. And I just had a great job going on in Saskatoon and whatnot. And then he quickly offered it to Lindsay, and Lindsay never said no for a split second. He was in Lethbridge, Alberta, left Saskatchewan, was in Lethbridge probably the same night, and on his way to driving Jurassic Attack for his starter.
So did you ever have interests yourself while you're seeing your brothers drive these trucks? You know, where were you at, and did you have any interests of getting one of those trucks?
Well, when Kevin was doing it, absolutely. Because back then he was in a truck called Young Gun before it turned into Jurassic Attack. And it was still a square chassis leaf spring truck with a full interior in it. Like you drove out the windshield and out the side window, arm out the window, old school like. And it looked rough, but it looked fun, man. We all watched those old school stuff, and it looked fun. You wanted to be there. The noise itself was just, yeah, it got your heart racing. So I always wanted to be involved. I was doing in Saskatoon at the time, I had a great job with I was at a machine shop building engines, and we did mostly just race engines. So it was something that I had a passion for. I was in the horsepower field right there. And I worked with one of my best friends, that Howard. He was my great friend of mine. And he was also my crew chief on a stock car team. And we had just won our first championship in a stock car. And I had also gotten a $4 raise at the shop that I was working at. And then Lindsay phoned me and said, hey, I'm moving to Team Creighton in Kansas. The seat in Jurassic's open if you want it. So it was really hard to turn away from what I had in Saskatoon, because I was loving everything there. But I knew that if I didn't take this opportunity, that I'd really be kicking myself in the pants, even if I did it for only a couple of years. So I'm super glad I did. I enjoy the heck out of it. And it moved me to Lethbridge, Alberta, where I have wife and family and my business and everything here now, and wouldn't look back, wouldn't change anything.
Yeah, you never look back and you get involved with the sport. You know, what were your first experiences? You know, you're driving Jurassic Attack with the team owner, Don Frankish. Now, Don's been on the podcast before. What were some of your early experiences being around Don Frankish?
Well, Don, coming from a small town farming community, exact same background where I came from, easy to get along with. It was just salt of the earth guy. He just easy to talk to. Absolutely salt of the earth guy. So we fit together really well right from the beginning.
Yeah, so look at that partnership, and you jump right into Jurassic Attack, and this is a truck that, you know, your brothers have been involved with, and now you are the next one in line. Now, I always found that interesting where, you know, Kevin is the older brother, but then you are older than Lindsay, but yet you're the third one to jump in the truck. Did you ever find that dynamic to be interesting?
Well, like I said before, I had my opportunity. Kevin mentioned it to me. He said he was stepping out and wondered if I wanted to jump in, and I just didn't know if there was any career or anything there to follow it. It looked cool. I just was somehow in my early 20s was thinking properly and thought about an actual career and where I was at. And so the opportunity was there, and I passed it up, and Lindsay took it, and it came back in my direction. So I'm grateful for the way it all worked out. I'm glad I had the years that I had in the machine shop that I was in. And it got me deeper into the stock car world there, out there. So it, and then got to change into monster trucks after that. It all worked out pretty awesome, in my opinion.
So yeah, talking about stock cars and going into monster trucks, you know, you have that other motorsport background. Now it's time to jump in a monster truck. What was that transition like? And what was your first time like driving a monster truck?
The stock cars aren't nearly as noisy as those things. Holy cow. That was my first experience. It rattled my cage pretty good. I don't think anybody told me to wear earplugs in my helmet, and I quickly learned after the first time in one. Yeah, the feel in a stock car is very tight. It hugs the road. There's no body roll. There's a lot of body roll because there's a lot of tire and a lot of suspension in those monster trucks. So it's completely different. Getting air in a stock car is not you don't hope for that for any sake, but trying to get one in a monster truck is, yeah, once Hans devices came in, you just more and more air you could get.
So what was your first experience like driving Jurassic Attack with Don Frankish?
My first experience, like usual, it was always tight to try and get to a show to get everything done. And so I was learning the ropes on our first show we did in Anaheim, California, I believe it was, before Monster Jam. So it was a full stadium, and I'd never even driven to one of these trucks, barely just around the gravel in front of the house. And then got thrown into a show, and that was the one where I didn't have earplugs in, and I was afraid to hit the throttle. I'm not going to lie. That engine probably did not see any more than 4,000 RPM. And when I hit the car stacks, I'm sure I bailed out of the throttle early, and it felt like I flew 5-6 feet in the air, maybe. Saw videos of it later on. My tires did not even leave the cars. It was pretty disheartening, but at least if I seeing that video showed me that I had to be a lot more aggressive, and I actually quite a bit more aggressive. It was pretty tame and lame my first show, but it quickly stepped up.
You know, Jurassic Attacks, you know, one of the most unique trucks in the business. And back then, that truck seemed to have a lot of horsepower and sure was a wheelie machine. I mean, did Don give you any advice for driving Jurassic Attack?
Oh, yeah. Don's been around the sport for so long. He's full of advice all the time. Any question you had, he's tried and done most of it. So, yeah, he gave me lots of advice. And also Lindsay. Lindsay was right there on the other end of the phone. Or there was times where we'd be at the same show together. Or he had lots of experience in that truck, too. So he would tell me little quirks and things that it does wheelie really easy. It's very light on the front end. It's got good power, so it was just a matter of getting your timing right, and that thing would slap wheelie right to the bumper, and you just watch through the floor and watch for the next obstacle and hope it doesn't trip you up.
See, I always found that fascinating where your first event was a stadium for Monster Jam, and it's Anaheim. That's unheard of in current time. You know, you have to get reps at smaller venues, or you have to show up at Monster Jam University, and there you're just thrown to the wolves. That had to have been a massive expectation for you going into those first events.
Yeah, the crowd, the whole nine yards, the whole experience, I'm not going to lie, was really a blank, because once I put my helmet on, I just tried focusing on myself and the truck. The crowd or none of that made me nervous. The truck made me nervous because of the amount of noise it made. But once I found earplugs, things changed quite a bit there. But being thrown into a show like that, yeah, it was quite something. In the later years, when I got to do Anaheim over again with, you know, 40, 50,000 people in the stadiums and stuff like that, then you start to really enjoy it. And there is times when you get off the throttle that you've done something cool. You can hear them. My first crack at it, though, I was, once that helmet was on, it was just complete me and the truck focus.
So I also noticed a lot in your Jurassic Attack runs, the truck would never have a headdress on it. You know, that was always a big part of the dinosaur look. Well, how come you never ran a headdress on Jurassic Attack?
Because I wrecked it. So we did Anaheim, and then I think the next show was San Diego, and actually blew up the motor in San Diego, and that was a Ford engine in there. We went over to Sam Sturgis's shop in Tucson, Arizona, and we shoved a blown Chevy engine out of one of his old tanks that he used to crush cars with. So we put a big block Chevy with a blower on it in there, got it all set up with a Chevy transmission, and then I think we did another Anaheim show and then went up to Vancouver, Canada, and something happened either in the transmission or I screwed up. I don't know. It was so early in my driving career. I don't know exactly what happened, but I came over one jump and the truck didn't pick up any acceleration. It nosedived really hard, broke the front tie rod end and barrel rolled back onto its wheels. And so my first month and a half of driving one of those trucks, I went through it all. And so, yeah, I crushed that headdress that went on the back of the cab. It was in so many pieces that it just never did get put back together.
No, I don't think anybody saw it again until the truck was repainted blue. And at that point, you weren't even driving the truck. I just always found that to be interesting. What were some of the other early struggles from inside the trucks? And maybe you haven't touched on that. On top of the cosmetic damages that you had to adapt to pretty quickly.
Well, rear steering was definitely something nobody ever teaches you how to rear steer a vehicle. So you have to kind of figure that out on your own. And in the early days, Don had his rear steering set up with two buttons on the floor. They're right beside the brake pedal. There was two red buttons on the floor, momentary buttons that if you hit the left one, the rear tires would actually steer to the right, which would turn the truck to the left. If you hit the right button, it would do the opposite, steer the tires to the left, turn the truck right. So you had to almost act like a drummer operating these two foot pedals, the brake pedal and the throttle, and get it all done. Eventually, I found a momentary switch that I was able to build a bracket and have just above my shifter and use my right hand to steer the rear end. And that was a lot more convenient for me. Not to say that the foot pedals thing didn't work. It just, for me, using my hands for that to finesse a truck around a corner was a lot easier than trying to use my foot.
And you were a quick learner because, you know, as the weeks go on, you get a lot of reps and you're in a lot of different environments and you're racing a lot of strong competitors. You know, early on, who were some of the top people that you were really excited to go head-to-head with every week? I know you're out there with Don a lot, but who were some of the other competitors that you, anytime you squared up with them, you had to stop what you were doing and really get your A game on?
Well, I mean, that early in the game, I had to, regardless, everybody came to present. So there really wasn't anybody that was a slouch. But I remember we did a lot of shows with, like, good old Sam Sturgis. I never really got to meet any of the guys like Dennis or Tom or any of them until the later years. But they were definitely something had to keep. You know, you really didn't expect to do well against them, but yeah, I'd always try. I never gave up. I'd always try. It's just the amount of experience that those guys have is incredible. Pablo Huffaker coming up against Lindsay. Lindsay was always awesome to run. We never did a lot of shows together over the years, but he had the talent and the power and everything else to scooch around the corners quick. And it's just, it's always best to be your brother. It's the bragging rights are that much greater at the end of the day.
Talking about all this talent, you're talking about your brother, Sam Sturgis. I mean, you name it. Was there anyone that inspired your driving style, or did you just go out there and wing it?
I would honestly say probably Lindsay. I mimicked a lot of what Lindsay did because he had success. Trying to figure out, you know, cornering and all the rest of it. I also took a lot of my stock car experience and tried applying it to the truck, you know, like entering the corner a little bit softer and slower and try and leave high and hard sort of thing. And, I'd say Lindsay was probably my biggest influence of trying to figure out, cause he was climbing the ranks really fast in Iron Outlaw. So obviously his formula was working.
Yeah. That's such a good point where, obviously, you came in after your brothers, but Lindsay moves into Iron Outlaw, and anybody that was watching Monster Jam on Speed Channel, they saw Lindsay was winning every time there was an episode on TV. It was this massive coming out party for Lindsay Wink. So then here's Nathan Wink. Was there expectation for you to live up to that same amount of pressure, knowing that, you know, you're a pure rookie in the truck, but your brother is dominating all the TV events?
Yeah, Lindsay had an amazing year that year. I think it was 21 wins in a row that he had in Iron Outlaw. It was crazy. He was kicking butt every single time he got in that thing. As far as expectations, anyone laying it on me, Monster Jam and true Monster Truck people knew that we were brothers, but for the most part, most people were fans, and we were just another truck, another face. So I didn't feel any expectations from the hardcore Monster Truck fans. They would tell me congratulations for your brother more so. And yeah, I never felt any pressure, which was fine with me. I think I myself put enough pressure on myself to try and do the best I can every time out there.
And you had a lot of accomplishments too. Do you remember the first win that you had inside Jurassic Attack?
Actually, I don't. I really don't. It was probably quite a ways down the line. It was probably like a fair or something like that for WGAS. My first Monster Jam win, I don't even know. I was probably not even in Jurassic. It was probably in El Toro Loco.
It wasn't Toro.
Well, hold on. Well, I have a wheelie win on my notes written down from Winnipeg 2005. Do you even remember that at all?
Yeah, I do actually remember that. Actually, that what happened in that wheelie was that truck, it was a fresh set of cars, back when they used to use cars. It was a fresh set of cars, and I came out, I think it was the first truck in that lane. So those cars didn't have any dents in them, and that truck really pops up fast if the cars are fresh. And I hit the gas just a little bit too hard, and the thing went right to the wheelie bar and felt like it was going to tip over backwards. And I had the presence of mind to quickly jam the shifter in reverse and pulled the thing back down. And it was good enough, I guess, to get the wheelie in that night.
See, that's why there's always a stats guy with Monster Jam. So happy to happy you have that written down somewhere. But, no, you mentioned a lot of the fairs. And, you know, as you're really the rookie season moved on, you moved out of the Monster Jam events, and it was a lot of the smaller fairs. And I know you mentioned WGAS. What were some of those experiences working with John Borba very early on?
They were awesome. John's just another one of those salt of the earth guys. He's there's no pressure at any of his shows. He just wants to put on a good, safe show and have fun. Borba shows were some of the most fun shows. Del Mar Fair was always a great show. There was heavy hitter trucks there, but you never felt like you were in direct competition with them for any reason. There was always a bragging rights. You wanted to beat the next guy, but it wasn't like a Monster Jam where there was nerves putting your helmet on sort of thing at a Monster Jam event. With Orvis show, there was never any nerves. And that probably made for a better show, to be honest with you. Guys that are relaxed and that are just putting on a good show for the fans, you know, running extra time and having fun in the truck.
You touched on Del Mar. You know, Del Mar is a pretty historic event. Do you have any memories from Del Mar you can share with us?
Del Mar is cool. I like Del Mar because Borba generally invited us, like the Frankish team with Jurassic and Maniac, and then usually Cretan's team was there too. So that meant my brother was going to be there. So the couple times a year that we got together was usually some other city somewhere in the U.S. We never got together in Canada for many years. So I look forward to that event mostly because of the people that were at the event. They made the event a fun event. And yeah, I think one year my wife flew down to the Del Mar Fair. Yeah, that's right. I think she lost her luggage in that one, or the airline lost her luggage.
That's not a good memory.
Now, of course, it'd be a place like Del Mar where there's just so many events crammed in. You know, since staying on Del Mar, because we've had quite a few guests that have been involved with Del Mar, those are very rigorous weeks where there was just a lot of events on top of each other. You know, being still a fresh face, you know, what was it like for you doing all these events at once, where the amount of events you do in that one week might be the amount of events that you do in a month's time? So what was that experience like?
Wow. Some of our internets are going weird. I didn't catch any of that.
Uh-oh. Okay. Well, I see you glitching, but I'll ask it again if you can catch me. But talking about Del Mar, there's a lot of events in Del Mar. There's the amount of events that you do in like one week in Del Mar is the amount of events that some teams do in a month. So what was that like for you still early on, having all these events on top of each other?
That was R2-D2. I didn't get any of it. Sorry, man.
Here, why don't you close out and then come back in so we can all catch you. I'll send you a message too in case you didn't get that. So if you want to bring us back in here, Vincent. Well, working on audio here, folks.
Gotcha. Well, we're talking about Del Mar. And I mean, like you said, it's vigorous weekend. I mean, so many shows packed in the one, but it's also, you know, a great opportunity for, you know, some new drivers and even veterans to get some seat time. I mean, I know a lot of drivers use Del Mar as, you know, a good place to learn and try new things, as, you know, they still do this today. I mean, wouldn't you say so, Phil?
Yeah, it's a rigorous weekend. Anyone that's ever been out there knows a lot of what it entails. And in case you're looking for Nathan Wink, a little bit of audio glitch. He's going to rejoin the stream here. So we're talking just about Del Mar, California. But now's a good time if you guys have questions for Nathan Wing. I see there's been a whole bunch. We're going to get to them all at a lot of points here. We're trying to build a storyline here. So, yeah, so if you guys have any questions for Nathan, leave them in the comments here. Make sure you share this video across social media as more people can jump in here and hear Nathan tell his story. And really getting to the meat and potatoes a lot of his career as we could try to continue on here. I see Nathan's in the queue if we can get his picture loaded.
Yeah, once that loads, we'll pull him back in. We can talk some more about Del Mar. Love hearing all the Del Mar stories. There's plenty of those.
See, I'm not seeing a picture on your end. And you try on your
phone. Yeah, keep those questions coming. We'll get them answered once we get Nathan back in here.
I see he's sitting there. We don't have his picture, folks. I don't want to pull up a white screen or anything.
There's a comment I want to bring up, but
I know there's a lot of the questions are getting juicier. He's going to come back, folks. I promise. He got this far, so
yeah, that's for sure.
You know, one thing I will say, you know, learning a lot of what Nathan Wink, and it's really where I hit at the same exact time is when his brother is setting the world on fire on TV, and you know, all of a sudden there's another Wink in the shadows, and it's, I always found that interesting where, you know, Lindsay's the younger brother, and instead, you know, Nathan comes after the fact, but then now he's got to play fiddle to his brothers, and especially Lindsay, who's driving this Iron Outlaw and is this big hot shoe rising star and really taking a lot of the storylines. And we know where Lindsay's career will go, but I just always found that incredible where Nathan's is really much in the middle of that, and then he has a lot of his moments, and that's what we're going to talk about when we get to that 2008 season.
Nathan was crazy. I mean,
yeah,
here comes another Wink out of nowhere, and we're going to touch on those moments here in a little bit. But you know, that 2008 season for Nathan was one incredible season. I mean, it wasn't too long, but he definitely made a lasting impression while he was driving that truck. And hopefully, we can talk more about it as Nathan will be here in just a second, working on getting him back in the queue. I think he's in the queue right now, waiting on his screen to pop up. There we go.
There's a screen. Can we hear him? Can we see him? Nathan, can you hear us and see us?
Yeah, this is better now. So,
a lot more clear, too.
Oh, right on.
All right, Phil.
That's live audio. Like I said, we don't edit this, so we're just going to keep going.
Yeah.
My shop neighbor let me borrow his Wi-Fi, so he said he was going to bail me, but I think I might have to bonk him on the head for this one.
Well, if he's in the comments here, we'll see if he could chime in. That'll turn into a fun one. But I'll reiterate with our the Del Mar follow-up. Saying Del Mar, there's a lot of events in that 1 week, and the amount of events in the Del Mar week could be the amount of events that a team does in a month span, and you're doing it all and just one on top of another. What was that like for you still very early on in your career? You have all these events going on, and it's, you know, drive and drive and drive all at once. What were those experiences like?
Well, like you said before, the John Borba shows were always really easy going. There wasn't a lot of pressure. So yeah, the shows were busy and they're super entertaining, but there was a flow to them that made sense and was, you could understand. And if you just went with the flow and watched what was going on in front of you, sort of thing, what the guy did in front of you, it was easy to just keep it flowing. And John didn't expect you to reach for the moon with the truck, sort of thing, so that they weren't breaking, so that they would come back out and show up again later on in the day. So they were a lot of fun. And like I said, the people that were there made the show fun. You know, you needed to lean on somebody like Pablo Huffaker for whether it be information or parts or whatever. They were willing to do it. So those shows like the Del Mar Fair were always a good time. I like them.
And it was about time that another Wink brother would show up in the comments. And this one's from Kevin. And Kevin says, has Nathan ever tried to impress a lady with a farm truck?
No, I haven't. Next
question. Someone's nose is growing.
I'll pivot. John Scott, unless you want to answer it, but
a long time ago, I was teenage age, and some reason I thought it would impress the girl if I started this old farm truck up because it was noisy. It was didn't sound like a monster truck, but that typical teenage, it was in gear, and I hit the starter and it tried to start and Damn near went through the back wall of the shop. My dad's shop.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Well, do you have any good Kevin Wink stories you can share with us?
Get one back at him.
Good. That's the problem.
Oh man.
I'm sure Kevin will have his day in the sun here, so we'll swing back around on him. But another question in the comments came in from John Scott Sherrill, and he asked, "What cities did you compete in up in Washington State?"
I believe did Spokane, and actually Kevin and I went to just outside of Seattle. I can't remember the name of the town right now. It was just outside of Seattle. Don actually couldn't make the show. He had something going on, and we got Kevin to jump in Maniac. And Kevin hadn't been driven a truck in, I don't know, probably 6-8 years, maybe even longer than that. He'd been out of the business for a while already. And so that was kind of cool. Him and I got to jump in a semi together and rip over to Washington and do a show together and just do it our way. And we had a great time doing it. And the others were Tacoma, which Tacomas were always hell gigs with Monster Jam. 2 shows a day for 2 days.
Got another comment here from Kelly Wink, and she says, do you have any good stories from the P&E events?
No. Not good stories. I don't know. Jeez. Wow. Everybody's embarrassed.
On it.
Yeah, I guess. I think probably what Kelly's getting at is at the P&E, I actually... Not my fault. Somehow it happened, but there's freestyle motocross riders there, and one of them got underneath my truck. The kid thankfully wasn't hurt, and it didn't even bend up his bike at all. But somehow when I was backing into my stall, I felt the front tire of the truck lift up, and I looked down, and there was a 16-year-old kid with a dirt bike under my right front tire. But I don't know if that's the good story you wanted to hear, Kelly, or what.
I'm sure if there's something more specific, she'll chime back in for sure. Another good fan question, fan question from Matthew Rode. He asks, my first Monster Jam event was Anaheim 2005, so it probably was your debut event. What do you think of the new Jurassic Attack?
I think it looks awesome. I think it looks wicked. I've looked forward to that truck changing. I mentioned to Don many years ago that like doing that Terminator red eye would be a killer thing. I think it looks smoking good. The paint job is cool. And the guys that are running it, oh man, they're doing a wicked job. I mean, that thing is on kill and they're pushing it to the front of the line every night. It looks cool.
Yeah, so crazy design. And anybody that doesn't know, we helped unveil that new paint scheme here a couple months back, so you can check that out. But, hey, you know, the Jurassic Attack is such a unique truck, and we've talked about a lot with Jurassic Attack. What was your favorite part of driving Jurassic Attack?
Anybody that looked at it liked it. You know what I mean? There wasn't anybody that had anything negative really to say about it, so it was always – right away, especially with the kids, I was one of the favorites. So just automatically, I didn't even have to do anything. And I was already like a fan favorite just for being involved with that truck. It was a very cool truck to drive. Fans liked it. The way it wheelied was definitely a cool thing. It didn't make for a great racer that way, but I had to figure that out on my own. And I was able to race it solid, but it freestyled a lot better than it raced. Regardless, it was always a fun truck to drive.
And then, you know, another truck you drove, obviously, a couple times, the team truck Maniac. You know, what were the biggest differences between driving your Jurassic truck to whenever you had to drive Don's truck?
Well, Don's truck had about almost 100 cubic inches more than mine. My truck, that old Sam Sturgis motor that we put in there, was only a 454. It was a well-built 454. It wasn't just out of a school bus or something. It was a intended race motor, but it had iron heads. It was only 454 cubic inch. And if I was making just over 1,000 horse, that's probably all I had. So I had to squeeze everything I could out of that truck. So his truck with a 540 in it made some really good power. And then his truck also had quite a bit bigger suspension. He had, I think it was 30 inch shocks in the front, 36 on the rear, something like that. And I had or maybe it was whatever. And I had 20 inch on the front and 26 on the rear. It was really, really tiny shocks that I had on Jurassic. It made it tough to jump over like a school bus or do any wicked stuff like that and not have land fairly hard. But I spent every weekend coming off of shows. If we had a weekend in the shop, or sorry, I guess we were always working on work, but like a Tuesday or something in the shop, I was pulling shocks apart and I was changing the valve stack so that I could try and make this truck land a little softer, make the rebound different, and did a lot of messing around. And by the time I stepped out of that truck, I really liked how the shocks worked. And when I stepped into El Toro, it had the same shock setup in it, just the tiniest shocks on a monster truck, I think.
So we're talking about, you know, Maniac and Jurassic Attack, the two Don Frankish trucks. You know, which one was your favorite to drive?
I really only drove Jurassic. I don't think I ever actually drove Maniac in a show. I drove it in and out of the trailer, and that was about it. I can't recall ever actually driving Maniac in a show. I love the paint job on Maniac. It's always had such a cool paint job. The Super Duty body looked great. Like, Don's stuff looked really cool. So to pick a favorite, I like Jurassic because I was the driver of it. So I'm going to pick that one. But Maniac was no slouch, and it looked awesome.
Yeah, another fan question came in from Travis Palm, and he says he's watching back an old Monster Jam episode, and a lot of people have been doing that with the new subscription service they have. So if you want to see a lot of old Nathan footage, go back on there. But he says, I saw you try to do a power wheelie in Jurassic Attack, so I have to ask, how easy or hard were they to do?
With that truck, and the, like again, with the way that I had the suspension set up, it was really light on the front end, so all I didn't even need an object to actually, I could just power wheelie it. I didn't need to slap wheelie it. If I stabbed the brakes hard enough, it would collapse the front shocks. And as they would rebound, if my timing is right, I could get it to transfer right back to the back bumper. And if there's nothing in my way, I could just keep dragging it out. But when you're in a stadium, you got to bring the front end down at some point.
Yeah, there's always a limit when you're riding a wheelie, but it's a very interesting because it's power wheelies are such a lost art in current monster trucks. But you know, as we look at your timeline, you know, 2006, you're continuing on, in 2007, you have another great first quarter in Jurassic Attack, but you step away from Jurassic at the end of that first quarter. Why did you step away from Don Frankish's team at that time?
Life was changing. I was engaged at that point and didn't really want to pursue. We were going to get married in 2008, and I didn't want to be stuck on the road, monster truck right off the bat in a fresh marriage. So I didn't know if I'd ever get back in it and whatnot. I was starting to, I know that the fans and everybody that wants to drive monster trucks would look at it as the dream job. And it is a fantastic job, but it's also a lot of work when you're an independent. So anything that breaks on that truck, I'm fixing it. I'm driving the semi, or Don and I are. We're both working together to get all that equipment down the road to the next show, missing your family, wanting to go home sort of thing. So I kind of stepped out of it because I didn't know if I was starting to hate it, and I didn't want to hate it because I was hoping that like maybe my kids could be involved someday. So I just wanted to step back and not have a negative feeling towards monster trucks. And yeah, it was fine. It worked out okay.
So now we're in 2008, you know, how did the opportunity arise to drive for Randy Brown Motorsports?
I did one show for Randy Brown in Halifax, Canada. Frank Crown used to, if Randy needed a driver, Frank would fill in for him every now and then. He would drive Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle for him every now and then. And Randy needed a driver in Halifax, and Frank couldn't do it. And he asked, well, he asked Frank, who would be the next guy to ask? And Frank suggested me. I didn't know Randy because Randy lives in North Carolina and didn't do our paths never really crossed. We probably did a show or two together in Houston. Don't even know or remember, but regardless, he phoned me and asked me if I'd do this show for him. And I was absolutely, I'll go out there and do that. And we clicked right off the bat. He's got a great personality. He just likes to joke around and have fun, and it just fit me so perfect that, eventually I just did that one show for him. And then after that, when he needed a driver for the 2008 season, he asked me to come and drive El Toro for him.
So El Toro Loco, it's a big popular truck, but you mentioned that Ninja Turtle too. I mean, between those two bodies, which one was your favorite?
I liked El Toro Loco. I mean, there was the visibility in the Ninja Turtle body was a little choked down, but I mean, it was still pretty cool. Stuff like that there again, you hit the mark with the kids. So right away, you're kind of like a hero just wearing the fire suit. You don't even have to drive the truck. You're just already people are a fan. So that's always a great feeling. If you can make the truck perform, it's a double whammy. And I did have a good run out there in Halifax with Randy. I think there was two shows, and I think both shows him and I went to the finals together.
So yeah, you know, the Halifax is such an interesting lot, speedway environment. And then you only did that one Halifax event, so you just weren't driving the rest of that time until 2008. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I was actually working on a farm up here in Alberta, just outside of Lethbridge. I was driving truck on a farm out there for those guys, and then the opportunity later on came up with Randy, and the farm was like, go get out, or don't let us hold you back.
So now you're in El Toro Loco, and what I found interesting, the first event for you in El Toro Loco was Birmingham, Alabama, and your brother Lindsay's there too, driving his newest ride, Blue Thunder. That was a big transition for that 2008 season too. So what was going through your mind there that first weekend? Brother's in a fairly new ride, you're in a new ride, and you're kicking off the season in the same place.
Well, like I said before, like it was hard to ever be together, like as far as Lindsay and I ever being together. So seeing him at a show or being at a show together was always, it's always awesome. And yeah, that was, I remember, yeah, he had just started in Blue Thunder, and he had a pretty wicked show, if I'm not mistaken. I think mine was not so good. My freestyle was the one that you showed in the intro clip there, where I blew the tire off. I came off the bus all crooked, and yeah, tried not to flip the thing over and ended my freestyle early. So my show wasn't the greatest there in Birmingham, but I know he had a good show.
Yeah, so that was always, you know, early growing pains in that Toro truck, and then you moved on to Atlanta, and then you have a lot of these TV experiences. Did you feel more pressure knowing that you're driving El Toro Loco? I know it wasn't technically a Monster Jam chassis. It was through Randy Brown. But was there a little bit more pressure now that you're representing, you know, a world champion brand opposed to like Jurassic Attack or another truck?
Yeah, I there was a bit of pressure, but I never really let it get to me. Nobody's ever told me, not even the fans didn't even suggest that they expected to see anything, or that they expected, you know, Lupe Sosa type driving or whatever. I just did my own thing, and the fans were happy with it. And generally, it turned out pretty good. In that truck, I did well with racing. So I brought the truck to the front most nights racing. Freestyle, I'd usually tailor that back a little bit, just because I was in the same trailer with Randy Brown, and we knew that we were going to be working on that Gravedigger as soon as the night was over. And I didn't want to work on two trucks, so.
Well, it was about time the other Wink brother showed up. It's Lindsay, and Lindsay Wink says, Nathan got me a gig driving his backup stock car for a race in Saskatoon and wiped the floor with me that race. Let him brag about that.
There's a chance. There's a good story. But yeah, we had our stock car team expanded to two cars, and we put together another crew and got Lindsay to drive the car for the season for us. And it was a wicked experience. I know him and I talk about it every now and then, here and there, where just the two of us together on a stock car track it wasn't the same as monster trucks whatsoever. To drive door to door, 100 miles an hour, pushing on each other sort of thing was pretty cool. And we got some cool pictures to come of it. And the crew that we put together to work on his car was both talented and awesome. Like, just nonstop laughs. There's so many teams that looked at us that actually wondered, are you guys even taking this stuff seriously? And we win, and we'd still laugh. Even if we had a shitty night, we'd still laugh about it.
Yeah, it was a lot of interesting nights there, and, you know, a lot of family love. So, you know, you're just talking about your freestyle with these beads, and I know we were talking about a lot of the tires falling off the bead there. How come you were so prone for those tires going all over the place in your freestyle runs?
Well, it was that. It was actually when I mentioned earlier, it was Birmingham show where I knocked the tire off the bead. It was actually Atlanta where I knocked the tire off the bead jumping that bus. And it must have done something to the tire. It would always take air, and it would always work good for a couple shows or most of the freestyle. And then it would all of a sudden blow a bead off to the point of, I think Monster Mutt borrowed me a tire for, I think it was freestyle in Tampa, Florida.
Yeah, I think you're correct on that. And let's, you know, let's talk about Tampa. Tampa was crazy night. It was a mud show. And, I mean, let's talk about that racing bracket. I believe in round two you had Stone Crusher. Pretty sure you lost the Stone Crusher, if I stand corrected. And then you move on to the semis. I think you came back to the semis against Tom as fast loser, something along those lines. You beat Tom. And then you move on to the finals. Now, what happens after that?
Well, to be honest with you, the biggest part of that whole night was beating Tom. I mean, Tom is a mud racer, and we were in torrential downpour. Before the event started, we had a horrible downpour, turned everything to mud, and then I think partway through racing or something like that, we got another big rain, and it's an open stadium, so... Yeah, it just turned to mud. And I think every one of us in the stadium knew that Tom is the only one that's going to win this event. I mean, he knows how to drive these trucks in the mud. And I just went back to my stock car roots where slow is fast. If you can make nice, tight, neat corners, make them concise and accurate rather than just ripping on the throttle, it slow is fast sometimes. And that day I was able to prevail over Tom. I remember watching him. Big wide sweeping corners, like 8,000 RPM, just flinging mud. But he went another 20 acres further than he needed to.
And then we're in the final round in Tampa. You're back up against Stone Crusher Steve Sims. You take the racing victory. What was that feeling like? You just won racing in a big stadium setting.
Yeah, well, I figured out how to work with the mud because I knew with running against Tom, I had to do something that was going to work or something that was different rather than just stabbing the throttle. And the low and slow worked for me. And when I came up against Stone Crusher, I just played the same game and I was able to come out with a win. And yeah, I felt amazing. That was my very first TV event win, stadium win. So I felt, I didn't even know what I was supposed to do after I got out of the truck and they're shuffling me off to a stage. So it was pretty crazy. I enjoyed it. And I'm pretty sure that was, it was. My wife had actually flown down to that event as well. And I told her before the show started, if I win, I'll give you a shout out on the microphone. And I never expected to win. So when I got up to the stage and there was a microphone in front of my face, I forgot everything I was supposed to say other than just mentioning sponsors and thanking fans. And so, sorry, Kelly, but I'll say it tonight. Thank you to my lovely wife for that win in Tampa, Florida in 2008.
What a win. And it's a muddy event. It's always a lot of, precise driving when you're at these mud tracks and it's right there on speed. And I remember, from being a dork fan, watching that on TV, big deal. It's like, oh, here's Lindsey Wink's brother winning. And that really got a lot of people knowing that's like, here you're on TV. You could be driving for however long. And I like to say that like Lindsey's career, where Lindsey drove Jurassic Attack for so many years, but the second he got an Iron Outlaw and was winning on TV, it's like he was might as well have been his rookie year that when he first drove Iron Outlaw. I felt that was a lot of the same with you in that first win in El Toro. But then that wasn't your first win because the next week we go to Orlando and Vincent has the rundown in Orlando the next week.
here we are in Orlando. Tension growing between you and your brother. You know, you both were at this show, so I'm sure there was a lot of pressure there. And, you know, Orlando, this is basically Vegas-style racing, so fast straightaways, lots of tight corners. You make it to the finals against Randy Brown and Gravedigger. I mean, what happens next? You cross the finish line. Who got to the finish line first?
Well, I got a trophy back there that shows that I ended up winning that event too. But
yeah, you got two trophies.
It was amazing. I didn't go because it was a Vegas style event with that much speed and that much tight corner at the very end. All the guys that were there all had Vegas experience. I didn't have any Vegas experience, so I was a little apprehensive of how it was going to work out. But again, going back to my stock car roots, the corners, I knew that I could figure out the corners and try and dominate the corner. And that's exactly where those races were won, was in the corners. Horsepower really didn't matter because the straightaways were so long that everybody running similar horsepower was running the same speed down into the corner. It was a matter of timing of getting on your brakes at the right time, carrying enough speed through the apex of the corner and get out of there and hit that last car stack and be done.
And that win in Orlando was really just solidified, in my opinion, from the outsider watching it on TV, that Nathan Wink is now a contender. You know, anything can happen on those mud tracks, but now here you are the next week and you straight up beat everyone. And it's now who's going to stop Nathan Wink? And overall, that whole 2008 season was super strong for you. And there was, I remember from the old message board comments, there was definitely a contingent that thought you should have had a run at the World Finals that year. Do you ever think of any of that when you're driving the truck, you know, keeping track of all the wins and where you're at compared to some of the other drivers?
Oh, well, us drivers, we're all egotistical maniacs. So there's no doubt that you're keeping track of all your wins and you know what you've done. And, you know, you're keeping track of your competitors too. So, yeah, I honestly felt that I should have had a shot at the World Finals that year too. But it's a Monster Jam show and they're playing it how they wanted to play it. So I was happy with what had happened that season to begin with. Like, I had a great season running with Randy Brown. Was so much fun because it wasn't, there was no pressure. Nobody was angry ever. It was just fun. It was just, again, another team that I was on where it was just a ball of laughs all the time. I'm still like, 2008 was the last time I ran with Randy. I still text Randy all the time and our crew guy, Chris. We still goof around and laugh and giggle through text all the time. It's just, yeah, we had a lot of fun that season and having fun and doing well at racing, I just couldn't top it.
You talked about Randy Brown, and I mean, you beat Randy Brown in Orlando and Gravedigger. Do you have any good old Randy Brown stories?
I don't know. We're always goofing around. Everything was jokes, and the funnest stuff was me being Canadian and them being from North Carolina. Both him and Chris Baker, they got their North Carolina accent and they say things different than I say them. So we're always beating on each other, whether it be in the semi or in the shop, on how I say things or how they say things. And we could always laugh about it. It was pretty cool.
You know, Randy Brown's such a class act. And anyone that's been around him and seen around him, they're always leave with a smile and he's always doing something hysterical. You know, and his trucks were right up to par too. You know, he's a motorsport nut and he maintained a well-oiled machine. What was the biggest difference driving a truck for Randy Brown compared for driving a truck for Don Frankish?
Randy just had a better he had a better arsenal in the trailer sort of thing. They were Monster Jam trucks to begin with, you know, so they were fairly up to date, and we had the parts in the trailer. Like, that whole year, we ran the Monster Jam. Actually, I think those transmissions were a different – Randy ran a different transmission. The whole year, I think I replaced one transmission, and it was because of Atlanta, Georgia. I stabbed the front of the truck into the ground, and somehow it broke the pump in the transmission. It wasn't even like we cooked a transmission. It was – and with other – like when running with Don – we were running turbo 400s and with these lengthy freestyles, when freestyles got past 90 seconds, we just created so much heat in the transmission that they couldn't survive. And they were so expensive to try and keep together I remember us having at one point 5 transmissions in the floor of the trailer with Don, and I remember rebuilding a transmission in a parking lot of a Super 8 motel in like Kansas. So it's just there was just better money in the Randy Brown team, and it helped keep the truck together. And not gonna lie, when it came to stuff with Randy, I honestly ran my freestyles really tame and easy going, because I knew that Randy was going to have a broken, messed up truck at the end of the night, and I didn't want to have to work on El Toro and Gravedigger. So it was fine, though. It was still fun, and I wanted to keep, like I said before, I wanted to keep the monster truck still fun for me and working on them. The amount of time you have your helmet on is the only time you're having fun, and you don't have your helmet on for a long time. So working on them is not always the greatest, but when you got to work on them with guys like Chris and Randy that are fun to work with, that helps.
So we're talking about, transitioning from, El Toro Loco and Jurassic Attack. So when you're driving Jurassic Attack and then you go into El Toro Loco, did your mindset change, jumping into, El Toro Loco is a whole different truck? Did your driving style change at all?
Not really, because if you remember, I was mentioned before that El Toro Loco had the exact same shock setup as Jurassic Attack, which I think is probably the only two monster trucks in existence. I don't know what Jurassic has anymore, but I mean, at that time, 20-inch shocks on the front, 26 on the rear, everybody had 30-inch shocks or bigger. So luckily for me, I was already dealing with a truck that I knew how to make these shocks work. The chassis, the Jurassic Attack chassis was a home built chassis. Kevin, my brother, built most of that chassis. Him and Don built a lot of that chassis. And so the El Toro Loco was a Patrick built chassis. So there's a little bit of chassis difference, but as far as driving the truck, they both felt relatively the same. Jurassic Attack was really light on the front end, whereas El Toro was a lot more balanced and would fly a lot flatter. It didn't want to wheelie as easy as Jurassic's, which was fine. You could find different ways to wheelie them. I showed a few videos of that.
Yeah, and he always found a way in the El Toro, and those were such big wins and really put you on the map. But again, at the end of the 2008 first quarter, you're out of the seat again. Now, is that a lot of the same reasons from the previous year, or is there just some other stuff going on?
April 2008, my wife and I got married, and that was just the end of the road. I was happy with it being that. And 2009, my son was born. In 2011, my daughter was born. So it was over. It was done. I had my run. I had my fun with it. I have no regrets of how short or long it was, and I enjoyed the heck out of it. To be honest with you, the stuff that they're doing in trucks right now, I don't want to backflip a monster truck, so I'm happy with watching it on TV. Lindsay can have that.
And Lindsay had a lot more years, and he's still active. But listen, your last name is Wink. You never stay out of the business, and you do have a couple one-offs here. Like, I know you jump into Jurassic Attack a couple times, some of the blue ones. But you have a couple one-offs in some different types of trucks. You have to fast forward a number of years to where you're driving Detour for Kelvin Raymer at Monster Jam. How'd that come about to where you're driving Detour so many years later?
Kelvin's out of California, and he was booked for the show up in Edmonton, Alberta, which is only about 5 hours north of where I live. And he actually, to come into the border into Canada, basically has to drive right through my hometown sort of thing. And his driver, I don't remember the reason, but his driver couldn't make it to that show. So he phoned, I think he phoned me, or maybe he phoned Don and asked if Don, I don't know how it all worked, but either way, he offered the opportunity to me to drive that truck. So yeah, it was only 5 hours away from home. And it worked out great. I mean, I hadn't been in the truck in quite a few years. It was a tight little stadium floor, so it was hard to relearn everything. And his steering was a little different than what I'm used to, so I fumbled up a little bit. But either way, we still made a lot of noise and tore up some dirt.
Yeah, there's the picture right there. Definitely a low-profile ride.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to bring up next. A great question came in from one of our most recent guests, Jason Court, from the Roughneck Monster Truck. And he says, when you were filling for Detour, other than being lower and wider, was there much difference compared to the more standard style chassis?
No, it was just lower and wider. The my biggest struggle with that truck was his rear steer switch. I remember how I said earlier, if you hit the toggle to the left, the rear tires actually turn to the right, which makes the truck steer left. Now his steered opposite. He wanted the truck to steer left when he hit the button left. He had it opposite the way I wanted it. And so I really struggled in that small stadium to wrap my head around trying to steer the back tires when there wasn't enough room. You don't want to hit the dasher boards or any of that sort of stuff. But as far as the chassis went, I really couldn't tell a difference. It was in a hockey arena. So you really don't get to test things out. It stayed nice and low all the time. I didn't do any donuts because the dirt in Edmonton in the wintertime is so, when they bring it in, it's frozen. And as it thaws out when the show is going, it turns really, really tacky. It flips trucks in a heartbeat. Like you don't even get a chance to pull out of a donut and save a rollover. It just flips them on their lid. So I didn't notice much different about the chassis itself, but it was still a cool truck to drive.
So then you got to fast forward just a couple more years where you get the opportunity to drive Operation Freedom Keeper for Darren Miguez. How'd that come about, and what was that experience like?
Yeah, that, again, was another Canadian show. And I don't remember if his daughter was driving that truck at the time or if it was Cam. I don't remember exactly who was driving that truck, but he needed a driver. His truck was booked for a show in Cranbrook, British Columbia, which is only about 4 hours from where I live. And so he needed a driver. He phoned me up, and Darren and Lindsay worked together with Two Extreme Racing with the Cretan team. So I knew Darren from a long time ago, and I got along with Darren. I mean, if you guys have met him, been around him, he's just a clown all the time, which is awesome. And I wasn't going to turn down an opportunity to just even hang out with Darren, let alone drive his truck for a weekend. It was fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun times here. And Vincent, I think it's time for the next part of tonight's program. What's next?
It's time for Explain That Photo. The rules, we keep it simple. Explain that photo. We're going to start off with the first photo.
Oh, yeah, that was a broken transmission that I was talking about.
Oh, man.
So that was Atlanta, Georgia, 2008. I came around a big sweeping corner in freestyle, and you can see the tail end of a red bus there, and the ramp was extremely wide. It was as wide as the bus, and somehow, I can't even blame the truck. I think it was me. I didn't get the rear steer straightened out, so I hit the ramp at quite a bit of an angle and actually went off the corner of the bus, and the rear tire kicked off the corner of the bus and drove the front end right into the ground, and that's actually right where the frame hit, and that's what ended up taking out the transmission.
Not a good deal.
See, I like this picture because, you know, current monster trucks, it's all about these stoppies and moonwalks. I know that's not what you're doing here, but it's like you're an early innovator with this picture.
Oh, damn it. If I would have thought about that angle, I would have called that a stoppie or whatever.
There you go. That was frame.
That was a figure back then.
Yep. Well, we got another picture here, and I believe this is at a John Borba show, a WGS event.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. I don't even remember what town that would have been in, but I do remember that picture. And yeah, it was in front of, obviously, Maniac. But we did quite a few shows for John, so I don't remember what town that was actually in.
Got another one here.
That was my very first championship in that car. It was, I think we had been racing. We'd raced for, or I started driving that car in 2002 or maybe 2003, and we won that championship in 2004. We had a wicked crew. We had a fun year, and yeah, it was great to. It wasn't easy. We won by I think like 4 or 5 points, but we still win.
So before you switch to the next one, Vincent, why the 48 and very much and heavily inspired Jimmy Johnson scheme?
Yeah, Howard and I, my crew chief, were both huge Jimmy Johnson fans, and we were both uncreative as hell to try and figure out a paint scheme on a car. So we said, copy something that's already cool and been done. We'll get more fans that way. If you just make a crappy paint job, then you got what you got. So we're just not creative guys.
Hey, so let it be known, Nathan Wink won a championship in the 48 before Jimmy Johnson. So
yeah.
There you go. Perfect.
There's another.
Yeah, so that's what our series up here called the NASCAR Canadian Tire Series. The picture before was called our Cast Car Series. We just raced locally with that. This series runs all across Canada. This is the best of the best in stock car racing in Canada. So feel very, very appreciative and lucky that I got the opportunity to race in this series. Kevin Kozak, team owner. And so as a huge thanks to that guy for even having the opportunity. And our team stepped up from a local level to come and race at a national level in these super fast cars. It was amazing. We did a great job in those cars.
And we have one more picture here. And what better way to end the segment with this picture?
Oh, yeah. I guess that was the one Washington City that I didn't mention when Buddy was asking about what. That's, I believe, Vancouver, Washington.
Very close action there, brother Lindsay and Elaine. Although I think Lindsay has you beat, but I can't tell from the angle.
Hey, you can't tell from the angle. Come on.
I think he trounced me that weekend, but it was always a lot of fun. But we actually had set up a scheme where I think that weekend I actually flew down to Red Bluff, California, and helped Lindsay drive the semi up to Vancouver, Washington. And then we were actually going to switch for that race. We were going to switch trucks and just see if anybody would notice and if anybody would care. And then we kind of thought maybe Jimmy Creighton wouldn't be too impressed with that whole idea. So we just canceled it. That's actually Lindsay beating me for once.
Well, hey, so obviously, you know, you are a Wink. Your brothers all have been in trucks. Just quickly, have you driven in an event with Kevin by any chance?
Yeah, just the one in Everett. Everett, Washington is where him and I took both Jurassic and Maniac down. So, yeah, I did do one event. That's the only event I've ever done with Kevin. Kevin, I was still in high school when Kevin started his monster truck career. So, yeah, I was quite young still at that point, and it was just watching Kevin whenever we went to events. And then when he stepped out, I was in the workforce and never really drove a truck again until I believe like Everett, Washington. And then he did drive a couple times for Jimmy Creighton up in Canada a few times.
And look who popped in the comments. Don Frankish. Don says, ask him what's the fastest way to tick off a drummer and how many beers do you need to buy to keep them happy? Oh, brother.
Yeah, I made some guys with really long hair and a lot of tattoos very angry. we were in the Paw, Manitoba. I think it was the Paw, Manitoba. It was in Manitoba. And we were at a grandstand type event. So we had, I believe it was like a horse track for the dirt area. And then there was a grassy infield area. So it was their small town or small city fair type thing going on. And so they had us do a show. I think there was some tough truck stuff. And then while they were doing that, a band was setting up for the rest after we were done. And they were, yeah, they looked like they would get along with Metallica and Megadeth really well. So I was happy. I wanted to actually hear what they had going on. But during my freestyle, like I said before, I get in the truck and it's me zoned in, me in the truck, my helmet on, just a zone. And I come off this vehicle stack that worked out just right. I figured to just whip a quick 2-3 lap donut right here and then rip back towards the car stack. not at all thinking that I was like 20 some feet from where the band was setting up. I covered them with dirt, all their equipment, all their expensive equipment for playing in a stadium. They wanted to throttle me pretty good.
Awesome. That's
play awesome. Off with a heavy tune. I what can you say?
I got away without a single punch, but I think a lot of people had to do some fancy talking on that on my behalf. I stayed locked in the trailer. If they could get through steel walls, then I was a dead man, but
well, dead man walking not. If anybody else has any questions, make sure you leave them in the comments. We'll definitely get to them. We've had a lot of great questions thus far, so definitely if anybody else has something on their mind, make sure you type it. We can ask your question again. Don't feel bashful if you asked one and you think you're done. But I know I saw a lot of questions up early on. For the trucks that you have driven, what has been your favorite truck?
I think probably Jurassic, just because of what Jurassic brought with it. Just the notoriety, like the instant fandom that people that had never even seen the truck before instantly fell in love with it. So when little kids or even bigger kids or moms even and dads come up to you and say it's a really cool looking truck, they've never seen this truck before, it's kind of a pat on the back, even though I never designed it, I'm just here driving it sort of thing. It's still a pat on my back sort of thing. So I would say Jurassic, the light front end that it had made it a fun toy for freestyle. It made it really challenging to try and race with, but I figured it out and I got there. I didn't do the greatest with it, but I was able to get myself to the final rounds in some racing, so that helped. But I would say that was probably my favorite truck.
Yeah. I know you touched on it a bit there, how current monster trucks have you pull back a little bit, but my buddy Brian Anger has to ask, do you ever get the itch to strap back in a monster truck?
I do a little bit, but no, I don't have a big itch to do it whatsoever. What they're doing in a monster truck right now, flipping it over, trying to do backflips and the trying to compete with like the Andersons and some of these guys that their two-wheel competitions that they're doing, they're insane. Like, I don't have enough hours in a truck to even compete with that, so I'd look silly. I'd like to get in a truck and do what we used to do, but I don't think that I would hold a candle to what's being done out there today. So I'm fine with just watching it on TV.
So since you stepped out of the driving seat, what were some of the things you are doing now that kept you active? I know you're a motorhead and you stay fairly active. So for maybe some of the people that don't realize what you've been up to over the last decade or so, what have you been up to?
Well, I own my own business. So I own my own trucking company. So that keeps me busy on the road. I'm stay local. So I'm not gone all the time, but that keeps me rolling. And then for majority of the summer, we race motocross. I say we, but it's actually just my son. I'm just now the team owner / crew chief. And I often wondered back in the day with my stock car crew, like I figured I couldn't twist an ankle or break a nail because somebody was going to want to jump in that seat, one of my crew. Like, why would you want to be on a stock car team and not be the driver? I never figured it out until I turned into a crew chief for a motocross racer, and just watching him ride the bike that I fixed, that I've tuned up for him, he comes back and says, you know, it lands rough or the front end feels weird, and I go and adjust it, and he can come back and tell me it feels better. And then to go watch him jump on the line and watch that gate drop and go full throttle for, 15-minute race or whatever, I totally get why my crew stood behind me. It's exhilarating being on that side of motorsports. So that's what we do now. And we're just gearing up for this new season to start here and looking forward to it.
I actually have a comment here from Kyle Bates. He wants to know what your son has learned from his dad and uncle. I hear that he's becoming one heck of a motocross competitor. What's that like?
Yeah, it's wicked. I love it. So I've never been involved in motocross racing. We grew up on a farm, so dirt bikes and quads were always around. But we never had anything racy. We always wanted something racy, but we never had anything racy. So when my kids, both of them, when they were about the age of four, we got dirt bikes. So my son Regan, when he got his first dirt bike when he was four, and I don't even think he was 5 years old, and he was already trying to jump the thing. And so we quickly found out that a PW50, you're not going to jump it and come away uninjured. So we got him on a KTM 50SX, and the next year we joined the racing circuit in Alberta here, and we race within about 3-4 hours of home. We go to different events all through the summer. It's usually about 8 or 9 events, so it soaks up a lot of our summer. And when we're not at the track racing, we're at the track practicing, or we're in the mountains camping with dirt bikes.
Hey, do your kids ever have, you know, aspirations to get behind the wheel of a monster truck? Or, and if they do, would you support them?
Yeah, I'd absolutely support it. And I hope that the Wink name carries far enough for him when he wants to drive. My daughter, I don't know that she wants to drive. I'm sure that she'd be just as happy taking pictures or looking at it or being a little princess beside the truck. But my son is definitely, he's always put out there. He's like, I want to do this when I get older. I want to do that. I want to do this. And one of the top ones he starts out with is he wants to do monster trucks first out of high school. Well, he acts like it's already there, set in stone for him. So hopefully, if the Wink name can hold enough weight, and he's 10 or 12 now, he's turning 12 in a few days. So if in about 6-7 years, if the Wink name still has enough weight, maybe he'll be in a truck, and absolutely I'll support it.
And the Wink name goes so far and wide. You know, you talk about your brothers, but I'd about to ask, has Kelly ever driven a truck?
Yes, Kelly did get an opportunity to drive a truck. It was a wicked proud moment for me. We did, we put on our own show. Don and I put on our own show here in Lethbridge, Alberta, our hometown. And Paul Mayfield, he ran a ride truck for out of BC, and he was at the event, and he had a girl working for him running that ride truck. And we came up with the idea, if Kelly drove Jurassic, then Christy should drive the Maniac, who Christy, you guys would know, later on ended up being Jurassic Attack's full-time driver. But she had never driven a race truck. She had just driven the ride truck. And so we put Kelly and Christy in those two trucks, and they went out and did their own individual freestyle. And it was kind of wicked. The first night, Kelly same as me, the first time driving a monster truck, felt like I got air, but didn't really get any air. And that night, Christy was on the throttle, and she was doing pretty good in Maniac. And so Kelly had seen videos of what she had done, and with a few pointers and whatnot, the next night she wasn't going to take second place. And so, yeah, she actually got some donuts in. She got some air with the truck. It was wet. And she came out of that truck, her hands were just a shaking, and couldn't believe the experience she had. So she doesn't care to ever do it again, but she enjoyed the experience when it happened. I know that.
Hey, you got to do it once. That's all you can do. So I love seeing that progression. And a lot of people, you know, come and go through the industry. And actually, I just had a comment come in from Philip Norman from the Norman Brothers. He said, the only guy in monster trucks that gave me the advice that I should have listened to. Do you remember running around with the Norman Brothers at any chance, Philip and Christian?
I don't. I honestly don't. I feel bad because I'm fine. Do you know where they're out of?
Oh, man. I don't know where they're originally based. Well, they eventually went to a crew for Monster Jam, and Christian drives for Bigfoot. So, and Philip went everywhere with them. They're longtime fans. So I'm sure you gave them great advice where, as they progress in the industry, man, Philip's in the comments here. I really like to know the specific advice that you gave him, but yeah. I always found that interesting. Yeah.
So I wish I could remember. Hopefully, if it worked, it worked, and I guess.
They made it far, so you had a good impact. So you're not getting blamed for nothing. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, if they leave a comment, we'll bring it up.
Yeah.
Anybody that doesn't have the last name Wink has decent questions and comments out there. Otherwise, they're just trying to hurt.
Shots fired. We try. but don't worry. The others will have their day under the sun, and you can razz them there too. So, but hey, do you ever wonder? So, like, let's do a little of fantasy booking here. Had you not stepped away in 2008 and continued to driving, where do you think your career trajectory would be? Would you still be driving, or what would it look like had Nathan Wink continued to be a full time driver?
I honestly don't think that I would have gone like as to the age I'm at now. I mean, I'm 44. I don't want to get beaten up in those trucks, even though with the seats and the safety gear that they got in the trucks, they do. They're comfortable to ride, and you're not getting that beat up. I retired in 2008. If I could put in another 2-3 years, I would have been happy with that. But our family was starting, and I'm totally happy with the direction that went. So I don't know. I wouldn't have made it another 10 years, I don't think.
But let's say you did, and the trucks continue to evolve and get a lot of opportunity to see a lot of different trucks. Do you watch now and ever wonder, or how should I say this? If there's any truck out there going right now, you had a chance to drive, what truck would it be?
Fantasy, Phil.
I don't know. I've never actually driven a truck body truck. Everything's had horns. I don't know why. It's a Ninja Turtle, Toro, Jurassic. Everything's been a body. I'd like to drive a truck that had a body on it that with a cool paint job. That would have been cool. But I would, as far as fantasy goes and being able to do any of the stuff that these guys do now, if I could put in the hours that these guys have in now doing the two-wheel stuff and everything else, I would like to drive in some of these shows. But to just pretend that I could jump in and compete with these guys today, it's far gone. But it would be cool to have the amount of hours that these guys have in and get and do the talented, fine-tuned stuff that they do with a monster truck now. I think it's super cool.
So we've covered a lot of spectacular moments in your career tonight, and some of those moments were something to do with the two trophies behind you from 2008. You know, what moment sticks out to you the most? What is your favorite moment in the monster truck industry?
Probably that second win in Orlando. I mean, beating Tom Mantz in the mud in Tampa the weekend before was incredible. And then to be able to go to the finals and get the win there was pretty wicked. But I really, really liked that Orlando event with that Vegas-style racing, because it took my experience from stock car racing to just finesse that truck through the corner to take it as far as it needed to go for the night. And that was a highlight for me, I'd say for sure.
And we had Travis Palm ask this question in the comments a little earlier. What advice do you have? This goes back to the Norman topic we were on earlier, Phil. What advice do you have for someone wanting to get their foot in the door in the monster truck industry?
I've been asked that a million times. People hit me up on Facebook and exact same question. If there's a local independent truck in your town, in your county sort of thing, and you've got some ability to mechanically work on the truck, you're going to have to start at the ground level. Nobody's going to just hand you a helmet and tell you, here, go drive a truck for me. Let's see what you can do. You're going to have to start by changing tire. You're going to have to change those big, heavy tires quite a few times before they hand you a helmet. So either find an independent guy, or I think Monster Jam has a school now, do they not?
Yeah, they're bringing a lot of people, a lot of different walks of life. And I think that's what's incredible now. There's so many ways that you can get involved in the industry. It's not even just driving, and there's so many options to do that. So it's really come a long way. And it's funny, I see a comment just popped up in here from Brandon K out there in Alberta. It says, Jason, hook Nathan up. I'm pretty sure he's trying to petition to have you drive Roughneck or at some point.
Yeah, so, I talked to him a few years back, and he mentioned that if there was ever an opportunity, but I'm sure he's got people that waiting on his doorstep to throw a helmet on the front of his truck.
That sure would be a sight to see, though. I cannot imagine.
If the opportunity is here, I'm not going to turn it down, but I'm just saying. He's probably got friends and buddies that he's promised, and I get it. That's fine. Everybody get – I've had my chance to drive one of these trucks, so if somebody else wants to get – has a chance to feel what I've got to feel, then give her.
See, now that was going to lead to my next question. If your phone rang at some point and somebody needs a driver for the weekend, and would you grab the helmet and fire suit and give it a shot?
Yeah, for sure, man. I wouldn't turn it down. If it made sense, if it wasn't interfering with, like, say, one of my dirt bike races or whatever, then I absolutely would I would go do that.
Hey, but they say once you're in monster trucks, it's very hard to get out of it, even when you think you are. But, you know, you're still involved. You know, your last name's Wink. That's synonymous with the monster trucks, and you've accomplished so much in your career. But when it is all said and done, what do you want your legacy to be?
That's a good question. I mean, I hope that the racing part showed up. You know, that I showed that I, if you were beside me in a truck sort of thing, that you'd have to be on your A game. So I hope that's one of the things that would be part of my legacy. I was in independent trucks. We never had the money to really go and freestyle trucks like they do with Monster Jam, and parts are just flying out the window like crazy. So I've never really had the experience to do any of that. So I would say just the racing would hopefully be the legacy.
And Phil, you forgot one thing. You forgot crude behavior.
Oh yeah. You can drive crude behavior if you want to.
Yeah.
I just made that official. Yeah. Well, whether it's crude behavior, roughneck, or anything else in between, I know we haven't seen the last of Nathan Wink involved, because you can't be. The last name's Wink. you've done so much. So I really appreciate your coming on board with us here tonight. I think it was great to really catch up with you and document a lot of your history. And, you know, those Wink brothers, they all stick together, and you're living proof right there.
Yeah, no, it's been great. I'm glad, happy to be on the show. I think this went awesome, and a few memories that I didn't know that were still stuck in there, so it was good.
Yeah, and another comment just came in from your brother, Lindsay. Both Nathan Cab, Both Nathan Cab were great supportive brothers that definitely were supportive in my career. I was lucky to have two Motorhead bros. Everybody's sticking together.
Yeah.
Perfect note to end it on.
Absolutely. Well, Nathan, until the next time, man, I'm sure you won't be the last Wink on this broadcast, but until the next time, thank you so much for being on the show, and hope to see you sooner rather than later.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you, Nathan.
What a great podcast.
Yeah, I tell you, say it all the time when we tell these stories, you get to learn a lot from the people. And again, a huge thank you to Nathan. I was telling him before, you know, he's somebody I've never even met in the industry. And when we reached out to him, he got back to us right away. He was super on board and super supportive, and just really excited to come on here and tell a story. And I'm very happy and honored that we were able to feature him and hear his story. And again, hopefully he's not the last member of the Wink family that comes on here. So, you know, you never know who could pop up.
Never know. Can't forget about Kevin or Lindsay. But, you know, like you're talking about, I mean, Nathan's story is pretty cool to me. I mean, he just comes into the sport. 2008 was a big season, like we were talking about. Takes two racing wins. I find that crazy. And just, it was, to me, it just came out of nowhere. So it was great getting a more in-depth look on, you know, the 2008 season and Nathan's career.
Yeah, absolutely. But hey, Mo, I'll tell you this. There's been a lot going on out on the West Coast lately, so do a couple quick shout-outs before we wrap this up on a bow. Our friends over at WGAS Motorsports, we gave them a lot of shout-outs here tonight. They have a cool program going on. It's starting actually tonight, and it's running until the next weekend. Out in Santa Rosa, California, Sonoma County Fairgrounds are doing the Hot Rod Drive-Thru Experience. I don't remember the official title, but they have so many.
I think we have a picture of it here. I'll pull that up.
If Vincent wants to pull it up, we have a lot of our past guests are out there. Sam Sturgis and Jacob Ladwig, David Tucker, obviously John Borba, Brandon and Jacob Galley from Wicked Strong. All their trucks are out there. Enforcer, who Jeff Souza drives a lot for, and probably a lot of our future guests, too, are out there as well. So there's the banner there. If you guys are out in Santa Rosa, California area, can make it over to Sonoma County Fairgrounds, check it out. Also, you can see the brand-new Skull Crusher full-size truck and the Sonoma Strong ride truck from our the Plato family. We featured Shane on here very early on. So definitely go out there and support them. And so it's always cool people thinking outside the box with you know, maybe still the lack of events, but there are events coming, isn't there, Vincent?
We'll talk about events. If you guys didn't know, me and Phil are based out of Arizona, and you know, things are starting to pick up here on the West Coast with shows, slowly but surely. Especially in Arizona, the month of May. You guys, if you don't have anything to do, come on down to Arizona. We've got two shows. The Monster Truck Insanity Tour is invading Arizona for, I believe, the first time. And, you know, first-time venues for the Insanity Tour. We're going to let the first date coming May 1st and 2nd at Tucson, Arizona. I believe that's going to be at the Tucson Speedway. Phil, you got the lineup on that?
Yeah, so coming to Tucson, obviously you're going to have a Named and Tamed and Rat Attack based out there in Tucson. So, of course, it'll be at the Tucson Speedway. But also the Miguezes will be out there. Nitro Menace, Darren Miguez, Caitlin Miguez, and Jailbird. Great lineup. Also, they're looking for some tough trucks. If you guys have a tough truck, make sure you jump on board there. Great lineup in Tucson, but there's going to be a different lineup when the tour goes to Lake Havasu City, Arizona the next week. I'm very excited for that one as well. Featuring a lot of our past guests as well, if you have the poster for that.
Can't forget about the UTV races either. So if you got a UTV, make sure you get that all set up. But we got Lake Havasu City. This is the weekend right after Tucson. And that lineup is going to be Vendetta, Jurassic Attack, Devastator, and Sniper. What a lineup that's going to be. And that's going to be May 7th and 8th. Definitely a show you won't want to miss if you are.
Yeah. And of course, the Mini Monsters as well. Don't forget about our Mini Monster Dads. I know they didn't chime in tonight because they're busy at the drive through, but they'll be out there as well. Warhead, and I think one other, maybe High Risk is going to be there. I don't remember.
They're probably watching, but shout out to the Shockies and Mike Minner, the Minners out of Warhead and High Risk. You know, those Mini Monsters have a lot of shows come with Insanity Tour, but I mean, it's definitely awesome to see shows picking back up here on the West Coast. So if you can make it out, we'll see you there.
But in the meantime, we're still here and we're still bringing you podcast episodes. We actually already have a guest lined up for next week, so make sure you stay tuned at the beginning of the week so we can drop the teasers on that, who will be joining us. But if you enjoyed our episode here with Nathan, again, a lot of people we shouted out here tonight and a lot of people that Nathan ran around with in his career, they've had episodes here with us. So go to our Facebook page and check out the video tab or the live tab, live podcast episodes. You'll see our entire library ranges from rising stars to Hall of Famers in the industry. Make sure you check them out there. And also audio only. So wherever you're on the go, you're at the gym, you're in the plane, you're going to Mars or Moon or whatever, wherever you can download podcasts, you can find ours. Just, you know, go in that search bar, Monster Truck Outlaws of the West. Find our entire library there and enjoy it wherever you enjoy podcasts. And if you enjoyed tonight's episode, make sure, again, if you haven't already, make sure you like this video. You share this video all around social media. Make sure you like our page, too, and stay up to date with what we have going on here. Like I said, we have a guest lined up for next week already, and plenty more where that came from. We still have a good chunk of people we want to feature on here, and we're still having fun. So
I didn't know some of our guests watching are going to go to Mars. That's pretty interesting. If you're and you got a flight to Mars, let us know. That'd be pretty cool to talk about.
Yeah, do a live stream for Mars. We'll check in right there. But hey, business is picking up, and we're still going along for the ride. So we'll see you here next week on the Monster Truck Outlaws of the West podcast. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll catch you at the next.